KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
We've got music from every flavor, so keep it tuned on 91.9 on that FM dial where you can turn on, tune in, and jam out.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Near the end of its recent two-week-long meeting, the Alaska Board of Fisheries considered a proposal to close off a small bay north of Sitka to commercial herring fishing. Proposal 179 earned considerable support from Sitka's subsistence community, but ultimately was rejected by the Board of Fish on a split vote. KCAW's Catherine Rose has this report.
Promisla Bay is a cove about 10 miles northwest of Sitka. In the last few years, as schools of herring have become more heavily concentrated in areas farther from town, the bay has become increasingly important for subsistence harvesters to harvest herring eggs on branches. Last fall, a traditional harvester proposed the Board of Fish close the area to the commercial sacro herring fishery. Sitka's Fish and Game Advisory Committee vacillated on its support for the proposal, initially voting it down in November before reversing its decision in January. It showed up at the board's table with support from the local committee and the public. At the Board of Fish meeting, traditional harvester Paulette Moreno called for the Promisla Bay area to be protected.
We have been cultivating this area to come back to more of an abundance for our traditional harvest. It is closer to town. It is safer for our harvesters on small skiffs to be able to reach the bay. This is an area that is safer, more economically feasible, and that produces herring eggs that we would feed our family.
Advocates for the proposal noted state data that shows few commercial harvests have been taken from Promisla Bay in the last decade. At the same time, the subsistence harvest has continued to supply more eggs to communities around the state. Tora Zamora of Ketchikan visited Sitka to help with the harvest last year.
It really is the capital of the herring. It's just full of life. And it was just so inspired by all the life that was happening and the opportunity to participate in culture and feed our community throughout Southeast Alaska, not even just Sitka, and provide eggs for here in Ketchikan too, because they provide for so many throughout Southeast Alaska in Chicacoan.
Several commercial seiners pushed back on the proposal. Permit holder Marcus Nelson of Metlakatla said it was unnecessary, as commercial fishermen don't go into the bay if they see subsistence sets.
If somebody is subsistence fishing in the area, every permit holder immediately moves out of the area. So it does not bother the area where they're subsisting, and they can subsist in the closed area, which is 10 miles that the permit holders already relinquished quite a number of years ago.
Some board members were swayed by the testimony in favor of closing the bay to commercial fishing. Board Chair Merrick Carlson Van Dort called it an exceptional circumstance of the subsistence economy.
I think the more I've listened to this discussion, the more hard over I've become, yes, that this is important. And not only for that reason, but also because of the safety considerations that we also heard in public testimony. This is an relatively easily accessible, you know, calmer waters areas, not out in the open. You can get there in a small open water skiff, and you can harvest safely in this area. At least that's what I heard in public testimony. I don't think it's unreasonable, especially considering the low use that this bay has had in the commercial fishery in at least the last 10 years, and I'm a solid yes at this point.
But board member Tom Carpenter said the low commercial use of the area demonstrated that the proposal wasn't necessary.
If people would have come up and said we can't go in there because the harvest on the commercial side is too much, they're interfering with, you know, our subsistence activities, I just didn't hear that. So I think that this is kind of a a unique situation around Sitka, and obviously I take it very seriously, but I mean, until it can be demonstrated that there is a real conflict, I just can't support it.
Ultimately, the proposal failed on a 3-4 vote. Of all the herring proposals it considered, the Alaska Board of Fisheries approved only 3, all submitted by state fishery managers. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
King salmon fishing won't be allowed on the Kenai River and will be heavily restricted on the Kasilof River this summer. As reported by KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game handed down several restrictions on February 11th on some of the central Kenai's most popular sport fisheries. 2 orders closed the Kenai River's early and late run king salmon sport fisheries. The early run closure covers the first half of the summer from May 1st to June 30th. The late run order covers the second half of the summer from June 20th to August 15th. The orders apply to the entire length of the Kenai River from its mouth at Cook Inlet to its outlet in Skidelak Lake. The closures come amid continued poor king salmon runs and are nothing new to local anglers. Low numbers of king salmon have prompted similar closures and restrictions in each of the last 5 years. The 2 orders prohibit fishing for any size king salmon, including catch and release. Any king salmon caught incidentally by anglers can't be taken out of the water and have to be immediately released. Both orders were issued due to anticipated poor king runs. According to the department, the Kenai River's 2025 early and late runs are projected to be the second lowest in almost 4 decades. In the Kenai River's early run, the department projects there will be more than 2,000 fewer large king salmon in the river than the low end of the fishery's optimum escapement goal. The late run is expected to come up over 5,000 large kings short of the minimum goal. The department also announced further restrictions on king salmon fishing in the Kasilof River. This summer, anglers may only fish for king salmon using unbaited single hooks and artificial lures. The order covers the river between its Cook Inlet and Tustamina Lake outlets. In May and June, anglers' bag and possession limit is 2 hatchery king salmon longer than 20 inches. The limit drops to 1 fish throughout July. Hatchery fish can be recognized by their missing adipose fin on their back near the tail. That fin is intact for naturally produced king salmon, which anglers can't keep under this order. The department is also restricting the Kasilof River's personal use gillnet fishery and closing king salmon sport fishing in Cook Inlet saltwater north of Bluff Point. All fishing orders and advisories are available on the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's website.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council, that manages federal fisheries off Alaska's coasts, wrapped up a week-long meeting on February 11th. At the center of the discussions, salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea. As the Alaska Desk's Theo Greenlee reports, It's become the biggest fisheries issue in over a decade.
Bycatch dominated February's meeting of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, a 15-member group that sets regulations for federal fisheries off Alaska's coasts. After a week of testimonies and presentations, the council unanimously approved a motion that inches forward a decision that could finally put to bed the issue of trawler's chum bycatch, which many blame for the catastrophic decline of chum returns in western Alaska. A quick primer, bycatch refers to fish unintentionally caught while targeting other species. In 2021, pollock trawlers in the Bering Sea caught 500,000 chum salmon as bycatch, fish that never made it back to their spawning rivers. For people like Amber Vaska in western Alaska, where subsistence communities are facing an existential crisis, that's unacceptable.
Subsistence needs are ignored. Restrictions are unjustly placed upon us. We have given everything, and bycatch is allowed without accountability. Our survival is worth less than the profits of this industry.
Vaska was one of more than 150 people who testified before the council. She works with the Tanana Chiefs Conference, which represents over 40 tribes in Alaska. Vaska argued that bycatch isn't just a crisis for fisheries. Their entire way of life is under threat.
You heard it today. You've been hearing it for years. It paints a heartbreaking picture of the salmon crisis on our well-being. Our lives, our culture, everything we are revolves around salmon.
On the surface, the issue may seem straightforward. Industrial trawlers scoop up salmon before they can return to western Alaska rivers, decimating subsistence communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. The Bering Sea trawl sector is the largest commercial fishery in the nation and is worth about $2 billion. Trawlers have been catching more chum as bycatch than fishermen in western Alaska are catching for subsistence. But federal and state scientists point to extreme marine heat waves, which have devastated chum populations, as driving salmon declines. Warming oceans are shifting entire food chains. But advocates for tighter restrictions, like Jackie Boyer with the nonprofit Salmon State, say bycatch is one factor communities can actually control.
Climate change is an issue, but that's something that we've got no control over. But what we do have control over is bycatch.
Climate change may be doing the heavy lifting, but 35,000 chum salmon were still caught in the Bering Sea pollock fishery last year. Meanwhile, smokehouses and freezers have gone empty in places like the YK Delta. Now, leading studies estimate that less than 20% of that chum bycatch originates in western Alaska and instead comes from Asia. The council has to weigh the impacts of bycatch against potential economic consequences for the trawl sector, too. Council member John Kurland told attendees the council was in a good position to support both groups.
It strikes me that the council's challenge here is to strike a balance. It clearly would not be practicable to close the pollock fishery and forego all of its benefits to the nation.
The council's motion includes five possible actions. They range from keeping the status quo and doing nothing to setting strict bycatch limits, seasonal closures, and industry-led avoidance measures. The council unanimously agreed to approve the motion, which means they'll study those alternatives to prepare for their meeting in December. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Now, the rest of the story. For one reason alone, shy little Carlos regretted his family's moving to the tiny town of Miami, Arizona. That reason was the kid next door. The boy's name was Bobby, He was a full-blooded Native American, same age as Carlos, same grammar school class, but a lot bigger. Now, Carlos was himself half Irish, half Cherokee, but apparently that wasn't good enough for Bobby, so every day after school he would chase Carlos home. Most days he would catch him and beat him up. But this is the rest of the story. Right next door to the cottages where Carlos and Bobby lived was a gas station. The owner's name was Jack. Every day Jack would stand there and watch the sad little scenario recur, the boy chasing the smaller boy and catching him and pounding him. Jack may have known that Carlos's father was an alcoholic who was mostly oblivious to his son's problems. Anyway, one day Jack decided it was time to butt in. He went to Carlos's mother and told her, please stay in the house today and do not interfere. She agreed. And sure enough, right on schedule, little Carlos came running past the gas station toward his house. Bobby the bully was not yet in sight. Jack, the gas station man, stopped Carlos. And he said, I'd like to have a word with you. Politely but urgently, the little boy explained that he must go inside right away. Bobby was chasing him and would be here any minute. Jack said, you're not going anywhere. You're going to stand up for yourself and fight this boy right here, right now. But Bobby was too big, Carlos pleaded. Jack would not listen. You're not going to run away anymore, he said. And the more he encouraged Carlos, the braver the little boy got. So brave that when Bobby the bully arrived, Carlos actually jumped him and wrestled him to the ground. And it was a brief tussle, at the conclusion of which it was Bobby who cried, I give. And as Jack had known in his heart from the start, Bobby would never chase Carlos again. In fact, perhaps predictably, they became friends. Sounds like one of the many mountainous molehills of which childhood is comprised, an insignificant episode in a life's greater story. But for Carlos, it was ultimately significant. And more. The time he turned around and stood his ground made him what he was to be forever after. You would never have heard of the little boy who let a big bully get the best of him were it not for the man he became. World middleweight karate champion from 1968 to 1974, and the star of movie box office knockouts like A Force of One and The Delta Force and A Code of Silence. But now and hereafter, whenever you hear his name, I hope you will picture a scared little boy. A scared boy trying to outrun a bully and a concerned stranger who put an end to the running of Carlos Ray Norris, TV's Walker, Texas Ranger, Chuck Norris. And now you know the rest of the story.
This is Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. Kodiak residents are among the latest to be fired by the federal government amid national cuts. KMXT's Brian Benwell reports.
National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration staff at the Kodiak office confirmed some of their peers were abruptly fired. Staff could not confirm how many people were affected or what positions were cut in this wave of firings from the Trump administration. NOAA plays a critical role in Alaska's coastal economy, especially by managing many of the state's commercial fisheries and helping enforce laws at sea. It also researches the effects of climate change, an issue that Republican President Donald Trump has long criticized. Some officials braced for cuts earlier this month amid executive orders targeting climate change programs. The White House's Department of Government Efficiency, run by Elon Musk, is taking credit for dismissing thousands of federal employees as part of an attempt to cut trillions of dollars in federal spending. While some firings have been ruled as illegal in courts and have led to rehiring some civil servants, many are still in limbo. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, as well as Representative Nick Begich, were unavailable for comment on the NOAA firings. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
Anchorage police say a man forcibly held a woman on top of him while lying on the ground and threatening her with a gun before he was fatally shot by officers last Friday morning. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
Officers shot the man after a roughly five-hour standoff at the Hampton Inn in Midtown. At a press conference Thursday, Police Chief Sean Case provided additional details on the shooting, describing it as a hostage situation. He says officers were called to the hotel at around 3:45 in the morning after being told there was a suspicious vehicle in the parking lot.
The vehicle was involved in a looting earlier in the night from the Anchorage Police Department.
Case said a man in the vehicle went to a hotel room where he met another man, a woman, and several children. He said officers communicated with the man and woman through a partially open door and determined the suspect was holding the others hostage. The suspect then pointed a handgun at officers and slammed the door closed. The man in the room with the suspect eventually was released as officers kept in contact with the woman. Case said a SWAT team arrived and crisis negotiators tried to get the suspect to cooperate for about 5 hours until, he said, officers were alerted to the suspect assaulting the woman. Case said they breached the door and saw the suspect lying on the ground with the woman on top of him. He was aiming his gun at her, Case said. The man was pronounced dead at the scene at around 9 in the morning. Police have not yet released his name. APD later identified the two officers who shot the man as Tomas Franjul and Jordan Varick. Varick is one of three officers in the last year to shoot two people in separate instances in the line of duty. This is the fourth police shooting in Anchorage this year and one of a dozen in the past 12 months. Seven of the people died. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
This is Alaska Public Media.
The Alaska Morning News is brought to you in part by
Matson. Delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at matson.com/Alaska.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Cigna Healthcare, a health benefits provider that advocates for better health through every stage of life. Learn more at Cigna.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
This is statewide news from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. Interior Alaska residents are hustling to get ready for the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race next week, now that the competition is starting in Fairbanks due to low snow on part of the normal route. Many business owners and checkpoint staff along the new trail say they saw this coming, but they say it's still a Herculean task to get ready to welcome floods of Iditarod staff, mushers, spectators, and, of course, the sled dogs. Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk.
When Pike's Waterfront Lodge staff got the news that they'd host the Fairbanks Iditarod for the first time in almost a decade, they comped about 40 rooms for the race's mushers and organizers, even though they're in the thick of tourist season for aurora viewing and are almost completely booked out.
We're already busy, but we love hosting the Iditarod. We're so happy it's here. You know?
Michelle Davis is the lodge's chief operating officer. She walks through one of Pike's few remaining vacant rooms, which could very soon be occupied by members of the Iditarod crowd. This one has a full view of the lodge's live reindeer pen.
We kind of wanted to feel like a cabin, but not a cabin, like more luxury, you know? So, and you open and you see reindeer. That's the best part. They're right there. And then you can walk out your room and you can be right outside with the reindeer.
Pike's Lodge is a pet-friendly resort, but the reindeer room invite doesn't extend to the dog teams. They scare the deer, so many of them will be kept at a nearby church. Davis is among many Alaskans in Fairbanks and in smaller interior communities, sprinting to ready enough beds, food, and warm drinks for Iditarod teams. It's an exciting time, Davis says, especially for her international employees.
I always let all our staff come out and watch a couple of the races when they're working, so it's going to be great for them to experience something they wouldn't have been able to.
And she says getting in the global spotlight at the starting line will be great for business. That sentiment was echoed in the public sector by Fairbanks Mayor Grier Hopkins.
It means a lot here to host the biggest sled dog race left in Alaska, and we're a big, strong supporter of our state sport.
Scott McRae is the president of a local tourism marketing nonprofit called Explore Fairbanks. He says his organization is already reflecting on the possibility that the city will host the Iditarod with greater frequency as the climate demands.
You know, we're seeing here how the winters in Alaska are changing, so this probably won't be the last time that we'll have a here. And if that's the case, you know, we will proudly embrace it being here and just kind of do what we do as Fairbanksons and, you know, try to make it the best possible.
Further out on the trail, Galena is scrambling to get its race checkpoint ready. The town of just under 500 wasn't supposed to be on the trail either this year. It usually only hosts the race every other year. Tim Bedoni, Galena's checkpoint manager, is getting lodging squared away at the community center, where mushers will sleep on cots gifted by the Red Cross to shelter people displaced by Yukon River floods in 2013. The dogs will bed down in the snow that covers a frozen lake nearby. There's also the food. Bedoni says he expects residents to rally to cook for the mushers like they've done in the past.
We have to practice hospitality out here. That's the way of the trail. You got people coming in with no ability to just simply go out to a restaurant, and they're reliant on us for that. And it's just, it gives Galena a good name.
The 2025 Iditarod will officially start at Pike's Waterfront Lodge in Fairbanks on Monday, March 3rd at 11 a.m. Lodge staff encourage spectators to arrive early to find parking and good spots to view the starting line. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
This is Alaska Public Media.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand, put a little love in your heart. You see, it's getting late. Oh, please don't hesitate. Put a little love in your heart, and the world will be a better place. And the world will be a better place.
Yeah, good morning, everybody out here in Paradise and TGIF. Of course, it is Friday. I think we have a game at 9. That's what I got last night. It had no word this morning, so I don't know what it's broadcast on. I hope we can bring it to you. I assume we can. It's Paradise. We must be able to. Start out with David Allen Coe with Texas Lullaby, Brooks and Dunn. After that, we'll burn that bridge. And then Drinking and Dreaming by Waylon Jennings.
See those tumbleweeds a blowing, Lord, it makes me wanna cry. It reminds me of my daddy and that Texas lullaby. See those cactus flowers blooming like the twinkle in his eye. Every time he started singing that old Texas lullaby.
Daddy told me all about it in that Texas lullaby. Them old longhorns are a ballin', Lord, I know I must be high. Wish my dad could hear me singin' this old Texas lullaby. Old guitar, though I never quite knew why. He said someday I'd be famous like that Texas lullaby. But it's been a month of Sundays since I seen that eagle fly, and nobody wants to listen to a Texas lullaby.
Yeah, I just got word the boys' game today is going to be at 9:30. It's an important game. It's Sandpoint right there on the threshold of making it real big here. We'll continue on with Brooks and Dunn.
It's good to see your dancing feet back out on the town. Rumor has it you've had trouble with your man. I've had trouble of my own, I think I understand. We'll put out your old plane, we'll build a bigger fire. I'll pick up where he let you down and take you so much higher. And if his memory comes around and you think you still care, we'll burn that bridge when we get there. Have us a time. He had his chance with you, now all I want is mine. If me had
or just a dance or two. And you'll forget, oh, what's his name and how he walked down on you. We'll put out your old flame, we'll build a bigger fire. I'll pick up where he let you down and take you so much higher.
Everybody's looking for some way. I'm looking for some way out. I've been wasting my time standing in line. If this is what it's all about, all I got is the job that I don't like and the woman that don't understand. So tonight at the bar, I'll get in my car, take off for the promised land. Drinking and dreaming, knowing damn well I can't go. I'll never see Texas, L.A. or old Mexico. But here at the table, I'm able to leave it behind. I'm dreaming a thousand miles out of my mind. This suit and this tie is just a disguise. This ain't really me. Some people are born to be tied down. Some people are born to be free. When I look down the road, she don't know how it gets under my skin. She's got my body, but my heart and soul are out there riding the wind. Drinking and dreaming, knowing damn well I can't go. I'll never see Texas, LA, or old Mexico. But here at the table, I'm able to leave it behind. Break till I'm dreaming, a thousand miles out of my mind. Breaking and dreaming, knowing damn well I can't go.
Up next, we have a little George Strait with Famous Last Words of a Fool. After that, Red Foley with Freight Train Boogie. I don't remember that one, of course. That was 3 years before I was born. It was done in 1947. And then Hank Snow after that with the Rumba Boogie. That's a couple of nice old ones there.
I told her I wouldn't miss her at all as she walked to the door. I couldn't care less
if she didn't care anymore. And with tears in my eyes, I lied. I was glad we were. As she drove away crying at the famous last words of a fool. Famous last words of a fool. Famous last words of a fool. You won't break. And I don't love you. Famous last words of a fool. The first night without her would be easy, I kept telling myself. All the while dying at the thought of her lying somewhere else. And there'll be nothing to it, I'll easily find someone new. As my breaking heart the famous last words of a fool. Famous last words of a fool. Famous last words of a fool. You won't break my heart, and I don't last words of a fool. You won't break my heart, and I don't love you. Famous last words of a
man, but now he's a-resting in the promised land. The kind of music he could understand was an eight-wheel driver under his command. He made a freight train boogie all the time. He made a freight train boogie as he rolled down the Casey Jones, he was a-coming to town on a 6-8-wheeler that was burning the ground. He made a freight train boogie all the time. He made a freight train boogie as he rolled down the line.
boogie all the time. He made the freight train boogie as it rolled down the line.
And give a listen to me. Let me tell you about a new boogie beat. There's no hesitation, and it's sweeping the nation. It's the rumble boogie down the South American way. While Madame Lazonga was teaching La Conga in her little cabana in old Havana, we were doing the Charleston and falling to jazz. And then that old black bottom belly started the jitterbug ray. Across the wall there came Cuban Pete. He started the boogie to the rumba beat. It's the rumba boogie, let's give it a whirl. While he plays the boogie in the South American style. Then you circle around, count one, two, three, then put your right foot down. Then you circle your lady as you swing and you sway to the rumba boogie in the South American way. When that old piano whip starts to ring, everybody then starts to sing to the rumba boogie down the tropical side. It's the rumba boogie and the doing it all of the while. Leading the band, he yells, do your stuff, it's the best in the land. It's the rumba, let's dance it a while, to the boogie woogie down the rumba, keep them all style. Mama, no guitar. Well, across the water came Cuban Pete. He started the boogie to the rumba beat. It's the rumba boogie, let's dance it a while, to the rumba boogie down the rumba Cuban all style.
Yeah, the rumba boogie sounds like fun. Do the tango to that one, huh? After that, I mean, right now, which is after that, the Youngbloods with Hippie from Olima, number 5. I don't remember that one. I remember the Youngbloods. I used to listen to them a lot in 1970. But anyway, we have Rubber Rodeo right now with Walking After Midnight. Huh. Taking a Patsy Cline song to justice, I guess. After that, Vern Goslin with Set 'em Up, Joe. Here's the Youngbloods.
Well, I'm proud to be a hippie from Olima, where we're friendly to the squares and all the strays. We still take in strangers if they're ragged. We can't think of anyone to hate. We don't watch commercials in Olima. We don't buy the plastic crap they sell. Wear our hair long like folks used to, and we bathe often, therefore we don't smell. And I'm proud to be a hippie from Olima, where we're friendly to the squares and all the straights. We still take in strangers if they're ragged. We can't think of anyone to hate. Thank you.
love birds and fish too much for that.
And I'm proud to be a hippie from Olema, where we're friendly to the squares and all the straights. We still take in strangers if they're haggard in Olema, California, planet Earth.
I have a coda there that's not part of the song, so I cut it off. We'll continue on with Rubber Rodeo doing Walking After Midnight. Have little Tanya Tucker take us to the top of the hour with Texas When I Die.
When I die, I may not go to heaven. I don't know if they let cowboys in. If they don't,
KSDP is generously supported by Precision Airways in Sandpoint, Alaska, offering chartered air services throughout the Aleutians Eastboro and beyond. For more information on charters and prices, Theo is available at 907-989-4080. Precision Airways is a proud sponsor of KSDP.